For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
The morning after the night before, we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Dave Minuk, with Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, here to talk about the Winnipeg Jets and the Colorado Avalanche, the playoff series that the Avs now lead by a score of 2-1. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba, for all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. We say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It feels like it was just hours ago that we finished the Illegal Curve postgame show. Oh, wait, that is correct. That is what just happened. We just finished that about 8 hours ago, but glad to be back with you on this Saturday morning talking about the Jets and the Avs. Good to see you, gentlemen. How was the sleepover last night?
It was great. I mean, like, let's be honest, like, I could have gone home, but Naomi preferred that I slept over at Dave's house because I would have possibly woken her up. It was, I don't know, what time did you get home, Drew, but 1 a.m. or shortly before then? And obviously, Dave and I had to do the post-game show. So, yeah, Dave M. allowed me to sleep in his guest bedroom. It's a very comfortable... is that a queen, Dave, or a king? I think it's a queen. But it's... I should know. I slept on it. But it's a very comfortable bed. And then we woke up. I cooked Dave breakfast. We talked about what's... We talked about our day. We did some planning, some life planning. Let's talk about the most important thing about last night's game. First off, shout out to the good folks at Boston Pizza Taylor and everybody who joined us. Jet Oil Tom, it's your boy Bruce, Phyllis, and others. But Spency, MIA, Spency, you told me you were coming. No Spency last night. So obviously we missed Spency because they actually had 6 fish bowls lined up for Spency. And obviously I took care of those and I drank those. But no, I mean, guys, it was a very disappointing loss. I'm sure we're going to get into goal by goal and spend a lot of time talking about the penalties that the Jets took and the power play goals that the Avalanche scored. But, you know, we had the comment up there earlier from Charlie. I'll put it up here again. Like, the series is not over, guys. The Jets can still get home ice advantage back. Game 4 is a must win, but I mean, the sky is not falling yet. If the Jets go down 3-1, that's a different story, but I think we need to take a deep breath.
But I'd like to point out the flaw in what you're saying based on Charlie's comment. Haven't lost the series until you lose.
They have
the game
lost
at home.
2 games in a row, but
and they lost the game at home. So you got 2 X's against the Winnipeg Jets immediately there, Dave. So I'm not sure that the cobwebs are fully lifted from Mr. Ginsburg's.
That's true. I don't know what I'm talking
brain
about.
To start on this Saturday morning. The Jets are right. They're up against it right now. This is adversity time. You know, it's a must win game. On tomorrow afternoon. I mean, you can't sugarcoat that at all. It's a game that requires a better performance by the Winnipeg Jets, top to bottom. It's a game that requires the Jets to more closely resemble the team that we saw towards the end of the regular season and for large stretches during the regular season, because that team has been AWOL so far in these playoffs. And I'm not certain that they can turn it on / mitigate the impact of the Colorado Avalanche right now.
Well, I mean, look, the most important, the most critical, and the most obvious thing that we're going to talk about is the penalties. And 5-on-5 play from the Jets yesterday, they weren't caved. It wasn't like they had the worst game of the series last night. It was relatively fine from a 5-on-5 perspective. And as we talked about last night on the show, the Jets are up 2-1 after 40 minutes. Yeah. And, you know, everybody's celebrating and, oh, this is the Jets team we expected and blah, blah, blah. And the penalties did them in. The penalties and a terrible PK. A PK that wasn't sufficient. It wasn't doing its job. And that to me is the biggest story of that game, because if the Jets can stay out of penalty trouble, I'm not saying they win the game automatically but the point is, I think they play it a lot tighter. That game doesn't end up being 6-2, right? 4 of those goals, I'm not going to listen to the idea that it's only 3. 4 of those goals are, you know, special teams or man advantage or whatever it's going to be, empty net. So the fact of the matter is, yeah, they scored 5 goals, but you know, ultimately, what one of them in the third period was a 5-on-5 goal, but the other four were either power play or an empty net. And again, like, I know the Pionk one, the penalty had ended, but he was like a second out of the box before they scored. So it's basically a 5-on-4 because he's not back in the play. Doesn't count as a power play goal. But the special teams is the difference in that game, because 5-on-5, again, the Jets didn't, like, look, the Jets didn't play their style to the way, the degree that they needed to. And Ezzy and I talked about that. Like, when we were talking about this series, we said, is it going to be off? It's offense versus defense. And what's the old adage? Defense wins championships. Well, so far, the Jets aren't playing the defensive style that they became known for. Again, folks, let's be aware. Let's back things up and remember the 82 games we watched of this regular season where this Jets team was a stingy team, was able to play a defensive structure, not get out of it, not play somebody else's style, but to play their own. Now, I'm not saying they did it for 82 games, obviously. They did it for 52. That's a pretty big difference, right? So, look, that to me is, you're right, Drew, they have to play more of their style, but also you can't afford to take penalties at the best of times, and you certainly can't afford to take penalties against McKinnon, Makar, Ratanen, Nikushkin. Like, they've just got too much firepower to take these types of penalties and think that you're going to win hockey games.
Go ahead, Drew.
I was just going to say 15 minor penalties the Jets have taken so far in these playoffs. That's the third most. The Kings have taken the most, which is 18. I suggest they not do that against the Oilers power play. And then the Rangers have taken 16, but Ovechkin hasn't showed up in that series at all, so it's no big deal there, as New York has a stranglehold on that series out east. But the Jets have taken 15 minor penalties. And to your point, Dave, you can't do that against these Colorado Avalanche and with your terrible PK. I mean, that's, you know, and we talked about it last night on the post game show, Ezzy. It's too late right now to fix the penalty kill. That bed is made. You can't unmake it and then rebuild it and come up with a different system. What they have to do is look at it in the off season, and I'm sure that will be part of the deep post-mortem that this team does, is why was our penalty kill so poor, so porous all season long? They'll deal with that later. But then you're compounding the issue by taking these minor penalties, and some of them, sure, are a result of playing against great players in Colorado, but at the same time, you just have to find a way to stay out of the box if you're not going to kill the penalties. And that's where the Jets are running into problem right now.
There's no doubt, boys, that the officiating was suspect, and the Avalanche power play and their success on the power play was a huge part of that game. But you're allowing, taking out the empty net goals. We talked about this after I figured out the math. You take out the empty net goals, the Jets are allowing 5 goals against a game. Connor Hellebuck's save percentage is .870 in this series. And obviously, I'm not saying that Connor Hellebuck is the reason why the Jets are losing the series, but, like, give me one, maybe a player aside from Josh Morrissey who has really stood out in all three games, right? Like, and that's the biggest difference. Like, we can spend all, like, and I, that, you know, we were talking about this at BP Taylor. You know, Morrissey for the last few years has been a top 10, even top 5 defenseman in this league, right? Some people might even say better than that, but I mean, you're just not getting enough offense. I mean, the third line, I think you guys would agree, was the best line yesterday. Nino Niederreiter was incredible. He had a couple scoring chances. Lowry, Niederreiter, and Appleton obviously have been a fantastic line all year long. Rick Bonus uses them a lot, deploys them against the opposition's best players. But, like, it's not just one thing or two things or three things. Like, we talked about this quite a bit last night, right? Like, there just isn't enough. You're just not getting enough good performances from your best players. Like, I think Monahan, Toffoli, Ehlers, it's nice that that line finally got on the board, but I believe every single one of the Jets scoring lines there was a goal against on them, right? So this is a huge issue. And it doesn't seem, by the way, that Rick Bonus and the coaching staff has made the necessary adjustments from game 2 to game 3, right? Like, The Avalanche offense, like, look at what's happening. I don't know if anybody's following the Oilers-Kings series, but the Oilers are putting in just as many goals and scoring a ton of power play goals against the Kings. What did they have, 2 or 3 power play goals yesterday in that 7-1 or 6-1 win? So, I mean, it was framed as an offense versus defense series, and the Avalanche offense is dominating the Jets defense. So, you know, we can talk all we want about the Jets needing getting back to their structure, and you know, they need to control the Avalanche zone entries, and they need to reduce the Avalanche speed. Sure, but if they don't do it, then we're going to see a very similar result in game four, and this series could be over in five.
Maybe it's just a function, Dave, that superstar players come playoff time, step up their game, and no matter how much depth you have going against them, it's just not enough. I mean, maybe depth isn't all that it's cracked up to be.
The Avalanche depth is winning, though. Like Ross Colton, Miles Wood, Zach Parise. These guys are depth players. These are not, I know Parise was on the first line for a bit, but Nichushkin is back up there. But like the Avalanche depth players, maybe with the exception of game one, right? Because you had the Namestnikov goal, you had Lowry scoring two goals. But in two of the three games, the Avalanche depth forwards have been better than the Jets depth forwards. And that's not something we saw coming. We also didn't see Alexander Georgiev having better save percentage numbers in games two and three than Connor Hellebuck.
Yeah, but that's just more of a function of the Avs controlling the play, in my estimation. I mean, that is, it looks poor upon Hellebuck, and I get that, and I understand that. But I mean, truthfully, I just don't know what more you want from him. You know, when you're giving up all these power play markers and when you're giving up all these power play chances, in game one, the Jets were skating with the Avs. In games two and three, the Jets have not been as fast as Colorado. And I know that you can't be as fast as Nathan MacKinnon. I get that. But you watch that game and it just looks like the Jets are always, at least so far and through the first three games, more often than not, are just sort of holding on for dear life. And you can see the strategy for the Jets is to get it in deep and then try and grind Colorado down low. But they haven't been able to execute that more often than not because Colorado's been so good at getting the puck retrieval, puck out of the zone, speed through to prevent the Jets' forecheck from getting started. The number of shifts that the Jets have had where they've really cycled Colorado hard and grinded them below the goal line, especially in games two and three, are not very many, Dave.
No, I mean, if you're the Winnipeg Jets, though, you're looking at that second period as somewhat of your template, right? Where right. You limited the Avs to one high danger chance. You had eight yourself. So I would suspect you don't need to be a mathematician to know that eight is greater than one. And that, and again, you scored two goals in that period. They didn't allow one. So if you're looking for a
template, and Toffoli had the breakaway, right?
That's right.
Didn't score. Yeah. So they could have easily had three goals, right?
That's right, Ezzy. So the point is that you do have a template. Doesn't require a lot to be like, this is what we did well. This is how we were able to have success. And you're right, Drew, there hasn't. But again, like it's not going to really happen with the way the Avs play the game. They're just so fast and they just pressure so quickly that, you know, for the Jets to kind of play their sort of, you know, methodical cycle, it doesn't really work against an Avs team. I mean, you can try and do it, but like, obviously right now the Avs are proving to be able to counter that. I guess, like I said, the reality is you protected home base for the most part and you didn't allow them any sort of, or home plate. But the point is that you didn't really allow them that opportunity to, you know, get those chances on Connor Hellebuck. And so, yeah, they outshot you in the second period, but the reality was those weren't particularly dangerous shots. So if you're the Winnipeg Jets, and we've heard this from Rick Bowness and his coaching staff, they're prepared to give those up. Shots from the outside, sure, take a shot from the outside all day long. Mm-hmm. We'll give that up. That's their sort of mindset. But again, like I tend to think that folks think, like it feels the way that people are viewing the series as if it's a one versus an eight. Like it just, I don't know what we're watching like,
as in the Jets are the one.
Yeah, like the Jets are the one and the Avs are an eight. And I'm thinking to myself, like, this is not consistent with reality, right? These are two teams that were, I know the Jets beat the Avs three times in the regular season, but these are two teams that were, you know, neck and neck as to see who's going to finish second, who's going to finish third. And the Avs had that stumble at the end of the season, whereas the Jets did not. And so the Jets ultimately ended up in second place, right? But it could have been the other way around. So what I'm just saying is that these two teams aren't, you're not looking at two teams that are, that from a statistical perspective, we're heads and tails above one or the other. Mm-hmm. It's just that these two teams, you know, like I said, right now the Jets are playing Colorado's game to a certain degree. And like, look, Nathan MacKinnon is double shifting, right? They're getting him out there on the ice. What did he play last night, Drew? 26 minutes?
I'll double check right now while you keep talking.
So anyways, it's just the Jets, I think, like I said, I'm not trying to dumb this down. This isn't Illegal Curve for Dummies. But I really think,
and 22 and a half.
Okay. So he played 22 and a half, which for him seems like it's but again, why do you,
the last 10 minutes of the game, why do you have him out there?
You don't need to double shift them when you're up 5-2, right? Yeah. So like that again is good coaching by Jared Bednar, but ultimately, like I said, this is one of those games that if you want to boil it down to something simplistic, if the Jets, and again, like I said, like you can't not say that the Gabriel Vilardi high stick was not a double minor. You can't say that the Neil Pionk puck over the glass isn't a delay of game penalty. They are penalties. Now, well, again,
and,
like so said,
and the Mason Appleton trip started it all, right? And that was the one that was marginal.
Right. And again, like I said, don't get me wrong. I think the refs, I don't like the way the refs called the game, because in the second period with the Jets up as they allowed like the hit on Neil Pionk, which is clear interference, they don't call. Like, I don't understand. Again,
the
if
Kyle
you don't call
Connor
it,
trip,
if again, if you, it, the Kyle Connor trip. So if you don't call the Kyle Connor trip, and if you don't call the Neil Pionk interference, that's fine. But then you can't call the Mason Appleton one just because the Jets are in the lead. Like, that to me is just, it's call the game. If you want to call the game, that's fine. Yeah,
set,
and you want to, and you
set the standard and stick to the standard. Don't change
right, and
it
the standard
from period
is,
to period.
And the standard was different from period to period. And that to right. me is the only, again, like I said, like I'm not sitting here going the Jets, you know, oh, the Jets, the refs. It's not about the refs. I just don't like the way they changed the standard in game. That to me is inconsistent.
Right. But so certainly that goal that with Appleton in the box, which tied it up at two, is significant. But everything else after that, you're absolutely right, Dave, was a penalty that was rightfully called against the Winnipeg Jets. You might not like the sequence of events that led to the Vilardi call. And I understand that completely, because initially it appears as though there's no call on the play, and then it's only after the linesmen consult with the officials and then they make the call sort of after fact, which, look, if that's allowed in the NHL, and
well,
it
obviously
seems
is
to be, yeah,
well, Spencey's, we got the comment up here, remember, when was it Rantanen, correct me if I'm wrong, chap, but I think, was it not Rantanen who cross-checked Scheifele in the face?
Yeah, look,
and that was on a delayed penalty, if I'm not mistaken, right, Dave? Like, yeah. The Avalanche, I forget, honestly, there were so many penalties. I forget. Maybe the chat will bail me out here. But I'm pretty sure the Jets had a delayed penalty, and then Scheifele, pardon me, the Avalanche had a delayed penalty, and then Rantanen cross-checked Scheifele in the face.
Yeah.
So sorry, Sam Girard.
It was inconsistent. I mean, there's no question about it. But at the same time, if you're blaming the officials for the results of these games so far, you're missing the forest for the trees.
Exactly.
The problem for the Winnipeg Jets is that they've been outplayed by the Colorado Avalanche. And the Colorado Avalanche, you know, they're superstars you knew were going to be able to take over at times, and they have. And the depth players for Colorado, where you thought the Winnipeg Jets would have an advantage, have contributed. Look, Ross Colton got a goal last night. Miles Wood has, what, two goals on the series. Zach Parise, playing in an elevated role that we weren't expecting, has been impactful. You go up and down the lineup for the Colorado Avalanche, and you would say that, you know, if you that their players have been more impactful on the series than the Jets players. I mean, Josh Morrissey, to my mind, has probably been the best, most impactful Jets player on the series so far. You need
Didn't
more.
Did I say that in the first 5 minutes of the show?
You did.
He's reiterating it
to get to my point. The Jets need more from Scheifele, Connor, Vilardi.
Yep.
They need more from Ehlers, Monahan, and Toffoli. They need more from their best players. The bottom six for the Jets have done what they can. I think we would all agree with that. Adam Lowry had that great, you know, game one. Nino Niederreiter was impactful yesterday. Vlad Namestnikov had the goal in game one as well. So the bottom of the Jets lineup has done their part. It's just their top of the lineup, which we knew wasn't as good as the Avalanche top of their lineup, but the gap between the two has been so significant that it's hard for the Jets to overcome that. That's where you need to focus your energies, I believe, is on the top of the lineup. It's time for the top six for the Jets if they want to bring the series back to all, and they want to extend the series and turn it into a best of three. They need to have their best games tomorrow afternoon in Denver.
I like how you brought that up, Drew, because so much of the focus has been how the Jets' defensive structure has crumbled, and specifically in the face of just a very speedy Avalanche team. And we already knew that going into the series. And that's, I think, guys, why almost the season series has been a curse for the Jets, right? Because the Jets were so successful against the Avalanche, specifically in the last game. What was that, exactly 2 weeks ago in Denver when they won 7-0, that maybe, you know, like Dave mentioned earlier in the show, we kind of forgot how close these teams were in the standings and the fact that the Avalanche not only could have finished second, guys, but they could have won the division. Mm-hmm. And oh, by the way, look at Dallas is down 2-0. They're a one seed versus the Vegas Golden Knights, who are an eight seed, right? So, I mean, what I've said before, Dave, is in both the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference, it's beneficial if you just forget the seedings. Like, don't look at the Rangers versus the Capitals as maybe you should in that series. Wow.
There's a couple series you can look at.
I'm saying, Drew, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. And the reason, and when I say it doesn't matter, it's because there's always upsets. That's what I mean. So the regular season is the first season and the playoffs are the second season. That's the point I'm trying to make. So even though the Jets were up 3-0 in the season series and finished second in the division, look where the Jets are now. The Avalanche are badly outplaying them in basically every area. Yes, the Jets were better at even strength yesterday. Okay, great. You lost 6-2 because you allowed two power play goals in the third period and a third goal that came shortly after the Pionk penalty expired, right? So, I mean, yes, the Scheifele-Vilardi-Connor line has to be better. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And, you know, I think you would benefit from a guy like Morgan Barron being in the lineup. He's not going to play game four. We don't know if he's going to play game five. Brendan Dillon could be out, whether that's short-term or long-term. That probably means Logan Stanley comes back into the lineup. And, you know, again, you're going to have to now face what's in front of you. And you have to have your best effort of the season. You have to have an effort similar to 2 weeks ago, Dave, when you beat the Avalanche 7-0. So again, the series is not over, but it could be over very quickly.
I see Jim Toth is waiting for us backstage, so we'll go to break. And when we come back, we keep the Jets and Avs conversation going with our good friend Jim Toth of CJOB Radio. Saturday morning, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Benuk, Ezra Ginsberg, don't go anywhere. Bottom of the hour, 9:30 in the morning on this Saturday morning. Drew Mandel, Dave Benuk, Ezra Ginsberg. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. If you haven't already done so, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Smash the like button. We'll do this all over again tomorrow afternoon following the Winnipeg Jets and Colorado Avalanche. Game four is a 1:30 p.m. Central Time puck drop, a weird start time, even weirder at 12:30 Mountain Time tomorrow. But we'll bring you all the latest after game four on the Illegal Curve post-game show. Our good friend Jim Toth talks about the Winnipeg Jets Monday through Friday on Jets at Lunch, and he probably does so other times as well. We invite Jim back to the program and welcome him to the show on this Saturday morning. Jimmy, good to see you. How are things?
Gentlemen, all is well. How are you? How's everything going?
Everything's fine and dandy.
Jim, I'm not sure if you saw my comment in the private chat there, but I said, welcome to the Winnipeg Jets Crisis Center.
You don't have to humor.
Well, I was listening to this the post-game show last night on 680 CJOB and getting back to some people on Twitter too. So I guess I'm a counselor now as well. There's lots to get to, and it's not all rosy. And I understand the panic of some Jets fans. I don't understand some of the other thoughts, but that's what we're going to get into. So it's always fun, and it's a great time of the year.
So let's start with that panic, because I mean, I think the panic is real. People have watched the first three games of the series. Game one was such an anomaly for how games are usually played, and the Jets came out ahead. Games two and three, special teams have certainly been a significant talking point, and the Jets' sort of inability to slow down the Colorado Avalanche has certainly been on display. So I ask you, Mr. Toth, how do the Jets get back to sort of playing this game, this series, in a style that they want it to play? The second period yesterday, by our consensus, was probably the best period, the most Jets-like period of the nine that have been played so far. How do the Jets get back to that on a regular basis moving forward?
Well, I agree with you, gentlemen. Like, I thought they were going to be under siege, so I don't judge much of the first period, and I give them credit for at the end of the first period how they sort of got their game back, and only being down 1-0, I thought was a victory. And then I love the second period, and that's what they got to do. What they have to do is stay disciplined. And the other part of that from the first period is you got to finish some of those opportunities, and that I think is one of the things that hasn't been talked about in this series of it becoming a track meet and a run and gun that the Jets definitely don't want to get into and have been throughout the three games of the series, is they're getting their opportunities and they're not burying them. They're not finishing early and at key points. I know over the years on social media, the timely save or the timely goal has come up, but I'll go back to when Kyle Connor fired that one off the post to make it 3-1. I think it's a different game. I think if you can finish that and he hit the post, I'm not, you know, knocking him for that, but those are the games of momentum, especially at the playoffs. If they could have got those first two yesterday in Denver, and then we don't know what would have happened. I liked their game until the third period. Connor Hellebuck had made 27 saves. They were up 2-1. There were parts of the game that I didn't like and still think the Jets were need to shore up, but they had it. And then they took the penalties. And this is a team. The one thing about the Winnipeg Jets, guys, and this is a general statement, is I think it's time, and I've said this last year, I've said it this year, you have to find that championship pedigree and take that next step. You have to find that goal. You have to find that save. You have to find that style that even though you're getting it handed to you, you get it back and you stop allowing the zone entrance. And when you get the puck out and it goes to the Colorado blue line, they get it back and boom, the wave comes back. And then boom, the wave comes back. And then boom, the wave comes back. You got to get it out when that second wave's coming, stop it and counterpunch it like a prize fight, a heavyweight battle. And that's what I think they've always been lacking a little bit. They're phenomenal players. It's a great lineup on paper. And I know what paper means. I think it's a deeper, better lineup. But you put the Woods of the world and the fourth lines of the world of the Colorado that I think aren't as good as Winnipeg's, the Zach Parises of the world, and you put them in that championship pedigree and it just flows, right? And the Jets need somebody or some people to sort of put their foot down and take that extra step. And I just don't see that from this team through the first three games. I still think they're in it. I don't think it's over. I know we're going to get into Hellebuck and everything else, but I last night on my crisis line, I'm not a doctor. I just kept saying, look, you may get 27 saves from Hellebuck. You're up 2-1. You go into the third period. This wasn't a 6-2 game until they started taking penalties and getting pounded. The game one, 7-6, I've been doing this with everybody who thinks Hellebuck's the problem. He was, you know, the 5-on-5 goals, he made 36 of 39 saves in game one. Mm-hmm. And up 3 5-on-5 goals, one was a horrific Sandberg turnover, one was a Nikushkin turnover in the neutral zone and blowing down the wing all by himself with a great shot. I'm not defending Hellebuck. I just watched the games. Game two, he had issues and had bad goals. I have no problem saying that. He needed to be better in those situations in game two. But game one and three, he is far from the problem. And when I say that, people say, but he can still steal one. I don't know what you want him to do. He's doing the exact same thing he's done in the regular season in games one and three. And we could look at Georgiev, and I give him full credit, game two and three. He's been better, but he hasn't stolen anything. He's made some big saves at the right time. But I just think that this team is – they went into Dallas and won 3-0. They went into Colorado, and a lot of that 7-0 win had a lot to do with Colorado not playing well. It had everything to do with the Jets not having gaps in their defensive play, having their great defense turn into offense and pound that goalie. And their great defense is not providing them all – keeping Colorado off and not much offense at key moments in this series so far, in my opinion.
Jim, I could not agree with you more about Connor Hellebuck. We were doing the post-game show at Boston Pizza, and you know, I can't believe that for a guy who's going to win his second Vezina trophy, and I agree with you, I think he's actually played – I thought he played pretty well in the first game, and he allowed 6 goals, right? I really didn't think – maybe the MacKinnon goal that was deflected, maybe you don't like that goal, but like you said, you went over some of the goals.
He just said it as – like, look, let's go through those. Yeah. Sandberg, horrific turnover back in the net. Nikushkin down the side, opens a score. And
top corner.
Great yep. shot, top corner, but still all alone. And the MacKinnon one was deflected. Then there's 2 power play goals off a screen and a deflection, and the 6th one went off his helmet, off Brendan Dillon in the back of the net.
It was a pinball goal.
And aside from that, he made 40 saves. So, right. You can get lit up 8-0. And if you're the 8 goals are like that, that's not on the goaltender. You could lose 2-1, and the one goal could be the turnover that Connor Hellebuck had in game two, and that's on the goalie.
Absolutely. And, you know, I wanted to ask you about what happened at the end of the game, because obviously that was a scary incident. I'll be honest, I didn't see it. I don't know if a lot of people saw Brendan Dillon, the cut. It was on his hand, I believe, right? Yeah. I don't think a lot of people saw it. But when I saw there was all this blood on the back of Brandon Duhaime's jersey, I knew somebody was leaking, and obviously it's very scary. You could see that, listen to Josh Morrissey's post-game audio, and I'm sure it was talked about on the CGOB post-game show. Very scary. And obviously, you know, the Jets was have been struggling with Brendan Dillon in the lineup. He was, you know, not his best effort on the Parise goal. But that second pair of Dillon and Pionk has really struggled. So what can the Jets do, right? Like, I mean, I think you would agree Logan Stanley probably comes in if Brendan Dillon can't play in game four. But, like, the Jets are relatively healthy with the exception of Morgan Barron and possibly Brendan Dillon. Like, I realize that everybody is saying the right things and seeing the same things, Jim. Like, everybody sees that the Avalanche are getting into the zone way too easily. Like, whether that's McKinnon, whether that's, you know, Nichushkin, whether that's Miles Wood, Parise, whoever, Makar, it's too easy. And then conversely, the Jets are having trouble getting out of their zone, and they're kind of like a one and done. They're dumping but not chasing. Like, I don't know, can the Jets even make the right adjustments, or is it just Colorado's playing so much better than the Jets right now?
Well, and to your point, I give Colorado a ton of credit. They can turn on their defensive game mid-period. They can have some Jets get some sustained offensive zone pressure for two or three shifts, and then they get back to their defensive structure, which is breakout, fast speed, fast break, and they can get it back in game. The Jets have to do that somehow. And I'm going to float this one out there, guys. I think Logan Stanley deserved to be in the playoffs. I think he played that well down the stretch, and they want that physical presence. I love everything about Brendan Dillon's play and his season. Mm-hmm. But for everybody who keeps saying you need big, hulking, powerful, strong defensemen, I think the Jets are getting caught up in the fact that this is playoff hockey. It's physical. We've got to pay the price. I get that. Not against this team. This team is speed. And what you need to do is get the puck out of your own end, more execute that more cleanly and well. And I thought Nate Schmidt had a phenomenal game last night for a guy who's not only not playing this playoffs, but that's what his game is, right? He might have lost a step. He might not be the physical aspect that Logan Stanley or Brendan Dillon is, but he was making things happen. And in the offensive blue line as well, it's a speed game against this Colorado team, and they can't keep up. So I'm wondering if Brendan Dillon can't go, and it looked really bad. I saw it, like, it looked like it might have been on his hand, and I'm hopeful for that as opposed to the wrist or where some tendons or ligaments are, but there's ligaments in the thumb and stuff too. I hope for the best for him. They need him in this series. But if he can't go, I wonder if it's not time for Colin Miller just to get out of your zone quick, just to sort of read what and adjust to how the Avalanche have. The Avalanche have sort of adjusted their game after game one, to get more pressure, more speed through the neutral zone to eliminate, you know, what the Jets are trying to do defensively. And they've left themselves open. I was looking at the stats before I came on, guys. And, like, the Scheiflies, the Connors, the McKinnons, the Rantanens, they got their points, right? They all have 4 or 5 points. And every one of them is either minus one or plus one. So even Nathan McKinnon has 5 points, but he's been on for four against in this series. And there is a counterpunch to this in a speed game. There always is. But I'm not saying Colin Miller should come in over Logan Stanley, but maybe I am. I'm talking myself into it. This system is built on getting out of your zone quickly and efficiently. And in game one, the mistakes they made in their own end, to me, wasn't from the great forecheck that Colorado brought in with the game plan, although the forecheck was great. They just were making decisions like Sandberg and like Logan Stanley going for the hit as opposed to just pushing the puck further up the boards. Those are decisions that weren't based on the speed of the Avalanche. They were, you had a little time to make a decision and you just didn't make the right one. To me, it's got to get back to the comfortability. And maybe this is what they do now after being down 2-1 and giving up so much is let's just play our game. If we win 1-0, we win 1-0. If we win, you know, 6-5, we win 6-5. But it all starts with exiting the zone cleanly and quickly. And then getting in on the forecheck. When they forecheck the Avalanche, I think they got something there, right? Like, that's when we see the offensive pressure. But to me, Colorado has won every game of this series with what they want to do. I have yet to see the Jets play their best hockey. And guys, if this series, if they don't get out of the first round, I was thinking this morning, I don't know how that is for the summer for this core. Knowing that every single year you've needed to take to a next level and you're just not getting there.
Jim Toth, our guest, Saturday morning. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know Jim, of course, from his work with CJOB Radio. Jets at noon, Monday to Friday, breaking down this team we cover so in-depth with insight and analysis.
Well, Jim, you traded a third and a second for Tyler Toffoli. You traded a first for Sean Monahan. At the time, everyone was praising it because it looked like it was the greatest thing ever. He finished with the regular season with 52 wins. But that second line, I'm sure they got a goal yesterday, and Tyler Toffoli could have had a second goal on that breakaway chance at the end of the second period. But what are you seeing from them? And clearly it's not enough, because all we heard for the two games preceding game three, 2 days, I should say, preceding game three, was we need more from the second line. We need more from the second line. They got a little more from the second line on really a kind of a fluke goal on Georgiev. But what are you seeing from these guys who seem to have so much chemistry? And remember, Rick Bowness, when he moved Ehlers up to the line with Scheifele, he was talking about how he didn't want to break up this line because they were going so well. Well, we're not seeing them going so well. So what is it that they're not doing sufficiently in this series for you so far?
Well, in full disclosure, when this series started, I said that I'm a big third line guy. I think third lines win you championships. I think to win one, you have to have goaltending. To win one, your top six and best players, not every night, but have to be your best players and your point leaders. And your third line has to contribute and shut down. And if you have a really good third line, I think that's how you win championships predominantly. Not every single year, but that's what I believe. I went into this series saying this series is about the second line. I love everything about Nikushkin and Lekkonen and I don't about Casey Mittelstadt. I'm not bashing him, but Sean Monahan and should be outplaying Casey Mittelstadt, in my opinion. I think that this is how, because the third and the top one are going to take care of the McKinnon-Rantanen line. You are playing against a third line. You have to take advantage of that. You have to take advantage of being better than them, and you are better than them. I don't mind Monahan's game. I think he's had a bad one. And then the other two, I think he gets four or five shots a game and is doing his yeoman's work. They got to get to front of the net. That's how they do the bread and butter, the Toffolis and the Monahans of the world. And then we come to Nick Ehlers, guys. And I hate to be that guy. I've said for 8 years now, I think he's great. And I know the analytics show that he's the best forward in all this. But he's becoming a player to me that you have opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to do some damage. And this is one of them. And you need to be a difference maker. You're not on this team to score 50 points or 60 points a year, 60, and be inconsistent. And I can see it in him, right? Like, he's frustrated. But to me, that line is trying to do too much. They're like the Jets, trying to not just simplify the game, play it the way you know. It's overpassing. It's too many looks. It's too many possession for too long that goes absolutely nowhere. They got to go to the net. Mm-hmm. And with Toffoli and Monahan on that line, who make a career, not just a living, a career out of going to the net, they need to take advantage of that. And they just need more from it. So it's not horrific, but they're getting outplayed. And I thought going into this, they could be the difference. Now, Nikushkin is a beast out there.
Yep.
He really is. And I think he's having a great series. We know Lekkonen is contributing in every single game. And, they were saying last night that Bednar loves him. Well, why wouldn't you, right?
Yeah.
That's the challenge. That's the challenge as an 8-year vet like Ehlers, or a guy who's won a Stanley Cup like Toffoli, is, am I going to get outplayed by this guy? Am I going to get outplayed by this line? And that's what I mean about the championship pedigree. I get it, right? Like, we've all been around teams long enough at all levels that you go into it and you're going to play your game and try and be better. You have to find a way. And that's what this time of the year is about. And that's why there's heroes at this time of the year. That's where there's guys that we only talk about at this time of the year and in the regular season wonder if they're done or whatever. And then they get to the postseason. Look at Zach Parise. I'm sorry, but he shouldn't be playing better than that second line. And is he playing better? Not overall, maybe, but he's contributing.
And he's got two goals in three games, right, Jim? That's pretty good for a guy who's 39 years old, right?
Yeah, and this second line got their first points last night off what, like you said, a bad goal. That's not good enough. And like, effort is a dangerous word. I'm not calling out effort. There's got to be another gear. There's got to be another level if you want to go someplace in the playoffs. And Zach Parise is finding that other gear right now, and he's working his tail off to get it. And I know when you're a skilled player, you want to use your skill, but you have to combine that with a hard-nosed, gritty, If I can't make this drop pass, I'm just going to take it to the net and I'm going to take this guy with me. And it's probably not going to go in, but that's what I'm going to do. And that's what I just think, that the second line could be the difference. They need more from them. Now, you could argue they need more from everybody, and I'll argue what more. I mean, Connor Scheifele, they're contributing, right? I loved Mark Scheifele's game last night. And I know it's not all about points, but it is. It's about points. You need to get some. You're not on the top six of the Winnipeg Jets to not score.
Right. Jim Toth, our guest, Saturday morning. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know, you talk about that, Jim, and you know, the superstars for the Avs have clearly been that. And we knew that, you know, Scheifele, Connor, Vilardi, Ehlers, they're not McKinnon, they're not Rantanen, they're not Nichushkin. What do they have to do to elevate their game even higher? Because I look at this game, I look at the series, and it seems like they're a step behind or a half step behind. And when you're playing against the talent that you're playing against, you can't afford to be that half step behind. So, you know, I know that it's, you know, it's easy to say you need to play faster, you need to be faster, you need to be more on your details, but it seems so far that those guys just aren't able, they haven't been able to elevate it more. So how do they do that at this point? Well, and sort of as an addendum to that question, we're sitting here, the Jets won game one, they've lost the next two relatively handily. How loud do you think the comments from Rick Bowness at the end of last season are maybe reverberating, saying, you know, you need to step up in the playoffs, and the Jets haven't been able to do that just yet?
Well, the second one first, Drew, how loud it is, it's haunting. It's right. Haunting me. We've all been watching this for a couple of years now, waiting for that next step, that next gear. And I'm not talking about the first round. I'm talking about in your play, that next level. And I'm sorry, like, Kyle Connor deserves a lot of harassment during that 0-5-1 streak they went on with how he backchecked in his play. I don't see that right now, right? Like, I think he's dialed in and flying. And I think he's creating. And he's going in to get pucks back. He's forechecking. I see that from Scheifele, the Vancouver game in Vancouver, the Rangers game in New York. I saw that. I see that in his game during this series. The rest got to find it, right? Like, the rest, how do you do it, Drew? You can't get faster, but I will say this. When they scored that goal and then when Toffoli got the breakaway, those are two different shifts where they were faster than the Colorado Avalanche. They have not looked faster than that, whoever they're up against in this series. But then they did, right? You're not going to get faster, but you can find ways to play faster. And to me, it's every shift. It's every shift just relentlessly. And that's why it's a grind and stuff. I can't quantify it. You get into situations like this and you elevate your game and you find ways to get yourself into a zone of where it's just relentless. And I think we're waiting for that. Now, Toffoli, I've seen it before. I thought he played really good last night. Monahan has had some shifts. But also, I think he's played really good. He's going to the net. He's doing what he's doing. Ehlers is flying out there in game one. And Ehlers is flying out there in game two. He's got to produce. And he can do it, right? But it's the fancy plays. In the regular season, I call them the hope plays, the drop passes. It's an age old cliche. Go north south. Good. Go north south and go to the net. Well, go to the net.
You look at Scheifele's. I mean, the goal that made it 4-2. The what is Scheifele turnover at the blue line? You know, you've got possession. You've had a good shift. You've kept things going the way you want it to go. Instead of going north south, he goes east west. Turnover and boom! Before you know it, you know, DeMello catches an edge and he stumbles and it's a 2-on-1. It's in the 4-2 game. I mean, put the game plan is clear. Is put the puck in deep and grind them, but then they get away from it.
Yeah. It's a forechecking system.
Yeah.
And if you don't get the puck in deep at the blue line, it doesn't forecheck. And guess what? This isn't my Sixers of the 80s coming back the other way. This is the Los Angeles Lakers of the 80s coming back at you. You turn the puck over anywhere in that zone and it is gone. It's a fast break. That's the other reason why you have to get it deep. You might be a team that faces Colorado and don't even have your system isn't the forechecking one, and I forecheck them. I don't want that coming back. No. Unless it starts behind their net. So
they can go 200 feet.
And that's what Rick, and they got to shoot more, guys. Like the overpassing, the 2-on-1s in the first game, I'm like, I'm not, if I'm on a 2-on-1, I'm telling my linemate right now, I'm not passing. Just go to the net. I am peppering Georgiev with shots.
And like Adam Lowry did on his first goal in game one, right? Like shoot.
Yeah,
the
five hole opens up. And so I just, it's easy for us, right? And they're watching film and the coaches are in there. But again, somebody, I think it was you as you brought up the comments of last season, how it ended.
That was me.
Sorry. it's what do you think Rick Bowness is saying? Like, when did they score goals? It's when they went to the net, built bodies to the net, shoot the puck. He said again last night, we got to shoot more. I would pepper Georgiev with shots, and I give him a lot of credit because those were timely saves last night. He even had a bad one. But on the Toffoli breakaway, when it could have been, you know, 3-1, that's a timely save. That's not the same stopping a breakaway when it was 6-2 last night. And he, you know, and so you got to go to the net. You've got to create traffic. I mean, Morrissey's both goals are from traffic in front of the net and just floaters. I don't think he's ever going to write home and say, clip that highlight for when my career is over. They're floaters, but there's people in front of the net. And that's what I think is interesting about Rick Bowness, because that's how the season ended last night, right? It started last February, disgusted, disappointed. They don't want to go to the net. They don't want to, but here we are. So, and I get it, right? There comes a time with a core that I give them a lot of credit this year because they've gone away from that, right? They're not a team that wants to have everything score from the outside and skill. But it's just a team that has not played to their best of ability in the playoffs in this series, in my opinion. I thought they got it going in the second period. There's parts of the first two games that I did see it. But this is a team that can play 53, 54 minutes, maybe against Colorado 50 because they're so good, of a defensive structure that exits quickly and forechecks the heck out of them. And they just haven't been consistent enough in that play.
Jim, a few things before I get into my question. I had to get this in. I didn't want to get this in before, but we were talking about Nate Schmidt and how you liked his game. Aside from Josh Morrissey, do you know who had the best in all situations expected goals for percentage? It was Nate Schmidt, right? Third pairing defenseman. Yeah. So that just backs up your point. If you like the fancy stats, expected goals were second best on the team for Nate Schmidt. The other thing, and I mentioned this on the post-game show, the thing that bothered me the most about the Lehkonen 4-2 goal is, yes, it's a bad turnover, but it's actually not actually, it wasn't fully a 2-on-1, Drew. Like, Scheifele is back there, and he kind of grabs Lehkonen, and then he falls. So to me, it's his defensive effort on the back check was almost as much of a problem. And again, I'll get into my question here, but that to me is, again, the margin of error and those types of mistakes where, you know, if you cough the puck up, then, you know, get back into the play and make a play, and he doesn't. So Scheifele's been good. He has 5 points in the first three games, Jim. He's arguably been the Jets' best forward, along with Kyle Connor. Gabe Vilardi, though, doesn't have a goal in the first three games, and that was going to be my question. Like, I know I'm not going to pick on Gabe Vilardi because, you know, he's had a rough season with the injuries and everything like that, but the Jets are allowing 5 goals a game. They need some players to start scoring goals, and Nick Ehlers is one of those guys, but I think Gabe Vilardi, he's got to step up as well.
Yeah, and he's getting opportunities, like on the power play for sure. He's trying that patented move and everything else. But and this sounds like I'm picking on certain players, and I guess I am, but I just I need to see that level, right? Like, to me, the MacKinnons, the Rantanens, the Nikushkins, the Lehkonens, and those guys, even Casey Mittelstadt has a point. But I've not been impressed with Casey Mittelstadt so far in this series. He hasn't stood out to me. It's they're going to get theirs. The Jets guys are getting theirs. There's more firepower on this team. Vilardi's one. Ehlers is another. Tyler Toffoli, Monahan, that sort of aren't producing. And so I look to your game. Are you playing well? Are you getting close? Are you snake bitten? And you're right. You know, they need a little more from Vilardi, but I like the way he plays. And the real thing that makes me think of this now is that you brought him up is at the end of the game, like I'm listening to OB and the call of Paul and Mitchell, and then I got the TV on. And when all that was going on, and even after Dylan left and all the, like, everybody's watching, but Vilardi was like one of the last guys off the bench, and he looked pissed. He looked angry, right? Like, he's upset. And I thought to myself, well, there's another guy, to your point, is. But then I thought, wow, I mean, that look, like, there wasn't a lot of go to the room, wash it, let's get on to the next one, this sucks. there was like some anger in that look. And that's what he brings, right? Like, he is a guy that when you hear him talk, and he had a great exchange with Kelly Moore when Kelly's like, when you played this well in the first and blah, 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 you thought I played well in the first? And Kelly's like, well, overall and stuff. And like he's direct. He knows it. He owns it. Nick Ehlers has always owned his game and stuff like that too. And I can understand an Ehlers being frustrated trying to find another level and do what he does. So, to me, he looks like he's trying way too hard. And just not being smart. But Vilardi's another one that he was brought in for this. And that's why I don't think this series is over. And people will definitely reach out to me if they lose 4-2 on Sunday and they're coming home down 3-1 and I'm going to hear it's over.
I told you, Jim, I told you.
Yeah, but it's not, because if the Vilardi with that look can find a level, and if the second line off that can go, you know, and maybe Toffoli sitting down and going, it's been 10 years, but this is what I remember and this is what I do. And let's, you know, and that, and I saw the goal off the Manson goal a little differently than anybody else. I was screaming at Ehlers to get up. Mm-hmm. I wasn't just the guy. I wasn't the guy who's like, well, Vilardi's got to pick Manson up out of the box and blah, blah, blah. I'm the guy who is like, there's 14 seconds left. If you don't know where that puck is, you lay down and you start swinging your arms to throw that thing behind the net. You don't sit there and turn around. And that's just the, like, sort of my point to this is, you think Nikushkin does that? Like, you think a Lekkonen or a McKinnon falls down like that and just starts looking for the puck and turning his head and then getting up? And I don't think that. There has to be, and I'm not just bashing Ehlers here, there has to be that I'm going to JT Miller chew through wood to get to this net. I don't want to go there. This has to set in for game four, in my opinion. I'm not going out like this. And I think that's what you saw at the end of the game, right? And that's what I meant about the summer. Like, they're not going to win every year. And this team, but they've all admitted to us on Jets at Noon as they've shown up. And I've said this so many times now, people are probably tired of hearing it. But unasked, they Kyle Connor, Josh Morrissey, we know we've underachieved as a core. And we want to do something about it. This is a cold, long summer. I don't know anything different than, I mean, guys, I lost a grade 9 basketball championship with one of my worst games ever. And I still think about that. And it doesn't bother me that I lost it. What bothers me is I wasn't good. And there has to be some of that.
Apparently they still talk about that in Lethbridge, Jim.
Yeah. Well, St. Francis Wildcats should never have lost to Gilbert Patterson. But there you go. I dropped some Lethbridge junior highs there. But I mean, my point to that is, and I'm not, again, at anywhere level to the pro game. And I get like, it's tough, and I get Colorado's a really tough team to play against. And especially with that speed. And there is some probably aspects of this is we can't keep up with them. You can't, like, we can't make a wave or magic wand. So then you find other ways to do it. But I just can't see this team, having not played in the first three games, their system to a T, like we've seen them play for 52 wins this year, and 10 of those 52 wins they played horribly and were still good enough to get wins or poorly. That's what I look for in athletes and stories and stuff, is just, I'm not going out this way. I'm not going home going, oh, I didn't get up and stop that puck from going the other way. Or I'm not going, I didn't go to the net. And when I should have, and I veered left as opposed to going down the I'm not going north south. I look at after three games down 2-1. I'm not going out this way. If they're going to beat us, I'm going to like wear this for a month after this series is over and be sore and be, you know, and every time I go over those boards, I'm like, and I'm not saying they're pacing themselves or anything, but that's what I look for. That's what the athlete who isn't the Rantanen, the McKinnon, the Scheifele, the Connor, the athlete who goes, you know what, I'm going to be the difference. And if I'm not, I'm going to go down kicking and screaming. The old adage that probably I've done too many times is, I'm not going to win this, but you're going to know you were in a scrap. And then I get the wheels beat off me. It's only happened like three times, guys. Don't worry. I'm not that big of a fan. But I know I'm going on and on here, but it's just time with this. Like I 2018 and then 2019. Bubble, Scheifele, Laine, injuries. Mm-hmm. We go on and on and on. I just really felt that this is the playoff team, and that's why I don't think it's over, that you learn from that, right? Like the Ovechkin rant in Toronto a couple of years ago, and then Babcock comes out after, and he's asked, well, he said that they're not willing, and it took me 10 years to learn how to play defensive hockey and understand that that's how you win a championship. And what did Babcock do to his team? Ovechkin's not wrong. He's not wrong. What do you think of what he said about your team? He's not wrong. And look at that team right now, right? Absolute loaded top six. And Ovechkin wasn't wrong. You got to find that within yourselves to go, it's enough. I'm just whatever. If we win this series, fine. If we don't, but this is what I'm going to do to sleep at night, however this run ends. Well, and then, I'm going on, but that's what I think I'm waiting to see from the core. And what that means is play your Dallas game, play your Colorado game, play your 8 games in a row game, play that game. And if the chips don't fall your way, then so be it. I go into the summer, I'm like, I'm going to golf. It's going to take me 3 weeks because I can't swing my left arm right now because I left it all out there.
Well, Jimmy, it's funny you say that because that's exactly the point Rick Bonus made before the series even began. He said, you know, regardless of the outcome, you just have to know that you were in the series, that you gave everything that you had to give in order to help your team win. And you may not win this series, but at least you can sleep at night knowing, hey, you know, we gave maximal effort throughout the course of however many games. Now, you're right. It's not over. You have to win 4 games, last I checked, in a 7-game series in order to be declared the winner to move on to the next round. But one thing that I think is interesting, and one thing that, you know, I'm noticing at least from a lot of the dialogue, it's as if folks forgotten how good Colorado is. And it's like I was saying before you joined us, it's almost like people thought this was like an 8 versus a 1, whereas these are two fairly even teams in terms of the production during the regular season. So do you think it's kind of being overlooked? Is that like, it's not like Colorado was a scrub team that's beating a Jets team that's just not performing well. And again, we just went over it for the last hour of the show. The Jets aren't performing to their abilities, whether it's Connor Hellebuck, whether it's the first line, the second line. But the point is, you're also discounting, I think, a very good Colorado team, a team that's playing extremely well and taking advantage of when you give them those opportunities, like the 3 power play goals. I know that was only technically 2, but Pionk basically was 2 seconds out of the box, wasn't in the play. So that to me is essentially a power play goal. So you're giving these guys opportunities and they're such a good team, 5th best power play in the regular season. So I'm just saying, like, to me, it seems like a lot of folks are mad at the Jets, and you have a right to be, because again, you're not seeing the best from them, but you're also, I think, getting a discount on how good Colorado is.
Well, and Kelly Moore said this to me before the series, like, Kelly's like, I don't make predictions because the Jets playoffs are a good example. You could be by game 3 last year and you have no Scheifele and Morrissey. And then like the series turns, right? And he's right. Like we could go into game 4 and all of a sudden in the first period, McKinnon and Rantanen go down and this series turns. So that's why it's hard to make predictions. But circle back to my point, Dave, you're right. The guys who have made the difference for Colorado have won a Stanley Cup. And we're all going to talk about how they're not, but that's the pedigree I'm talking about, right? You can't win a Stanley Cup until you've won it. You got to find that pedigree to get into your game, and that's how you win it. So you don't have to have won one to do what they're doing, but the fact that they have done one, that's the difference I see right now. Like I said, McKinnon's +1. He's got 5 points. He's on for a lot of games, right? He had a turnover last night in his own zone that led to a 2-on-1. But he's got that sort of, that's what I'm talking about. Next shift, 100%. Next shift. 100%. Back check on my own turnover. It's just that championship pedigree that you know, and you sort of, and I know every player in the Jets room is like, I want to do this. I want to get to that next level. But the balance is knowing that to get to that next level isn't about doing more. It's doing what you do extremely well and executing it extremely well. Like Drew, you said, how do they get faster? They're not going to get faster. What they have to do is get to what they do really well. And I think that's a disappointment. For Jets fans right now is they've seen this team play that well. People talk about the Colorado 7-0 game. I don't. I talk about the Dallas 3-0 game. Best game I see them play all year. Dallas couldn't get anything going. Mm-hmm. They were patient with their system and used the forecheck until they got 3 goals, and the goals came slowly and methodically. And that's what I don't see from the Jets. And that's what, to your point, Dave, of that, you're right, Colorado is good. I still don't think they're deep enough to win the West. And I know that sounds weird and blah, blah, blah. And I said at the start, other than LA, you tell me 2 teams from the West in the Western final and I won't argue with you. It's that wide open right now. But the difference so far is the Jets have not played up to what they can, which I think is disappointing to Jets fans. And then you add in the fact that when push comes to shove, that pedigree comes through for Colorado. And I think Jets fans don't see that in their own team yet in this series. And that's what is kind of the, you're right. We forget how good Colorado is. And I don't think they're as deep as the Jets one iota. But when these games go down, like they were down 2-1, right? They get a power play, Sharks in the water. There's the blood. And that's the pedigree. And I just, people say, well, you can't get it until you win. And I argue that, no, you've got to find it, and then you win, and then you know. And that's what I'm waiting for the Jets to sort of.
Cart before the horse, right, over. Jim?
What's that?
Cart before the horse.
Yeah, and so, like, that's why I don't, I mean, McKinnon, they lost in the second round 2 or 3 years in a row. I remember his post-game press conferences, and he's swearing, and he's just like, I'm so frustrated. Ovechkin for years, they didn't get it. They made it. They, and I think that's the other, the Jets haven't played anywhere near to their best game yet in this series that they're capable of. And then B, I think some Jets fans see that pedigree that comes through at Colorado at key times. And then, you know, this is a series that was 6-3 in the first game and 7-4. Then they get some power plays, blood in the water. I think the Jets need to sort of, but blood in the water doesn't mean, let's go. It means, what do we do? Let's do it exceptionally well and go from there.
We will find out tomorrow afternoon if the Jets are able to find that blood in the water and take advantage of it. Jim Toth will talk about it all on Monday afternoon, Jets at noon on 680 CJOB. Jimmy, thanks so much for joining us. Great insight. Great
analysis.
And also
thanks to your hair, Jim. Thank you.
Ezzy, can you stop interrupting me for a second, half a second, please? Thank you, Jimmy. Appreciate you joining us this morning. We'll have a great rest of the weekend. We'll be tuning in on Monday afternoon.
Yeah, and it's exciting. And I know a lot of people think this is over. They're seeing the same old things. And to a certain degree, they are seeing the same old things. But this is why it's great, right? Like, I mean, the best part of this is if they don't pull this series out, then I just said what we're going to be talking about. It's a hard summer. And if they do pull this out, that's why I'm not a Jets fan. I'm waiting for these stories of people that make it step up and blah, blah, blah. Or, and if they don't, how tough that is to deal with. And so it's not over, but, they need a big effort and a good one tomorrow. Always love, talking with you guys. That's why I go too long and you need to punt me off quicker, but, always love talking hockey with you three guys. Keep up the great work and I'll be watching.
Thanks, Jimmy. There we go. Jim Toth joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, more Jets and Avs talk. Megan Angley is going to join us at the bottom of the hour for the perspective of the team in Denver. Saturday morning, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Don't go anywhere.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers, too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Whoa, Ezzy, everything okay? You look stressed.
Of course I'm stressed. We're moving, the house is upside down, the kids failed miserably at packing the fine china, and my life is in chaos. Chaos!
Yes, that does sound like a problem.
What am I going to do?
Ezzy, relax. Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage is the answer. With 60 years of experience in moving Manitobans and a track record of exemplary customer service, one call to Rolly's and your stress is gone. No job is too big or too small. Just visit Rollies.com and they will take it from there.
Thanks, Dave. And thank you, Rollies Transfer Moving and Storage, online at Rollies.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center and they whitened my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go,
"We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?"
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs from restorative to cosmetic dentistry and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see LindenMarketDental.com.
It's all over, folks, and the run has come to an end.
You'll be so far away. A Canadian team hasn't won the Cup in over 30 years.
And the Cup will stay south of the border.
Maybe it's time we try something different. This playoff season, let's cheer with the fans we've always cheered against. Team up for the Cup at Boston Pizza.
Hey, Winnipeg, Wendell Clark here. I'm coming out there May 28th for the Rady JCC dinner. Myself, Dougie Gilmore, Grant Fuhr, some good storytelling about Winnipeg beating us up when we used to come there. See you there.
We did it again!
You're on fire, man.
There's power in a handshake after a great game or great deal. It shows professionalism and respect. Two qualities Zappia Group Realty take pride in. You don't build a business where 95% of your clients are referred by others without honesty, integrity, and total dedication to client satisfaction. To sell your home for more in less time, shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Get started at zappiagroup.com.
Second hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts late as we go along with Jim Toth, but well worth it because it was a great conversation with Jimmy. Always thrilled when he's able to jump on with us in case you missed any of that interview. It'll be available on the immediate YouTube replay and, of course, on the podcast, which will be up shortly after this show winds down in the next 45 minutes or thereabouts. Megan Angley, as I said, set to join us in about 15 minutes time here with she has to say her perspective on the first three games of this series between the Jets and the Colorado Avalanche. Gentlemen, you know, we haven't really discussed any lineup changes or the thought thereof of any lineup changes, especially up front. We know there's already been the Nate Schmidt for Logan Stanley swap on the back end. I can't say for certain if Brendan Dillon's going to be in or out of the lineup tomorrow. If I was a betting man, I would guess that he's probably not going to be in the lineup. The Jets skate, I believe, at 2:30 Central Time today, so maybe we'll get a little bit more information at that point in time. I would imagine it's going to be a optional skate for the Jets after last night's game and before tomorrow afternoon's game four. Lineup changes. Is that something you think that Rick Bowness is considering, or even a shifting of the forward lines themselves, keep the same 12, but maybe swap some guys around? How do you think the Jets need to sort of rejuvenate themselves ahead of game four as they look to even the series at two games apiece, Ezzy?
Well, if you want to start with the forward lines, we've talked about the second line, obviously, you know, produced for the first time in the series. The first two games, they were kept off the board. So I don't necessarily know that you're going to switch that up. I mean, I've said this to you guys before. I said this to you guys last night at Boston Pizza. Like, I really liked Nino Niederreiter's game, like driving the net, using his big body, shooting the puck. So, I mean, Niederreiter, I guess, could be an option on that second line. I think Vlad Nemestnikov could be an option on that second line. I guess, you know, if you're asking if I think Bonus will, then I would say no. I don't think he's going to necessarily change any of the forward lines, guys. Like, Morgan Barron's out of the lineup, so obviously Cole Perfetti is the next man in. I just don't know, like, who are you taking out of the lineup for Cole Perfetti? I Alex Iafallo. I think Alex Iafallo has been, you know, pretty decent in the series. Remember the forecheck that led to the Vlad Nemestnikov goal in game one? You know, maybe he wasn't as noticeable last night, guys, but, you know, in that third period, how many Jets were noticeable with five Avalanche goals going in, right? So, at forward, I would probably lean towards you're going to go with probably the same 12 forwards and the same line combinations. And you mentioned it, Drew. We don't know. We're going to have to wait till this afternoon. And obviously, that's why we have Dave M., editor of IllegalCurve.com, who's going to update everybody. As soon as we get the news from whether it's Mike McIntyre or Marat or Mitch Clinton or whoever's in Denver, we're going to report that to everybody. We'll have an update this afternoon, Dave, right around like 2 to 3 or something.
Yeah,
his hand situation, and I'm sure, you know, we're going to get some commentary from Rick Bowness and maybe some other players about the Brendan Dillon situation.
Because he'll tell us it's his leg.
Yeah, exactly. He'll just tell us it's upper.
He got a crap in his leg. He's okay.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, so that's a big one. But like, you know, like I think the obvious, you know, bump up is Dylan Sandberg moves up to that second pair, and then, you know, you bring in one of Logan Stanley or Colin Miller. That's the interesting one. And Jim Toth talked about it during that interview with him. You know, I think you might consider bringing in Colin Miller And look, Colin, you brought in Colin Miller for a reason. And Colin Miller was on that Vegas team that went to the Stanley Cup final in 2018. He was obviously on the Devils prior to coming to the Jets, but he's a guy that he's not flashy, but he's a good all around defenseman. He can skate. He's a puck moving defenseman. That's so right. You wonder maybe
the question positive.
Yeah, exactly. You go to Colin Miller maybe. And then I don't know what that means, Dave, like in terms of then you've got too many right shot guys, right?
Well, maybe you move. I mean, Schmidt can play both sides. He hasn't played the left side, you know, really at all this year. So
that's why I don't necessarily know that you do it. Like, I'm kind of leaning towards, I know some people are not going to like this, but I'm kind of leaning towards they go to Logan Stanley. But I would think if I was Rick Bowness, Scott Arneal, the coaching staff, Dave, and I'll throw to Dave here because I've been talking too much. I'm just saying maybe you do consider bringing in Colin Miller because let's be honest, guys. He's got the playoff pedigree. I don't know how many playoff games he has. Let's say I think it's 20 or 30 playoff games. Drew's going to look it up right now and make me look bad, but I think it's something like that, 20 or 30 playoff games. Like, it's more than just one playoff series.
No, he played like 20. He played 20 in that Vegas series as at least.
So 30 or 40?
40 playoff games.
Okay, I said 30 or 40, right? So I was in the neighborhood. So I think it's not like you're putting in a young defenseman with no NHL playoff experience, like Ville Heinola, for example. Like, Dave, we're not going to go down that road because Ville Heinola is not an option. It's either going to be Logan Stanley or Colin Miller. But I just think, Dave, the coaching staff should think about that just from the fact that the Jets are having trouble exiting their own zone. They're getting caved in by the Avalanche speed and forecheck. So that's all I'm saying. Maybe you decide to go with Miller instead of Stanley, and then you figure out the left side, right side situation.
Yeah, I mean, good. No, I was going to say, like, I think what Ez is reasoned out is reasonable. I think that it's interesting to think that you need goals. You have a 19 goal scorer who's sitting on the sidelines right now. He's probably champing at the bit, ready to get in there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, is Rick Bowness prepared to pull Tyler Toffoli or move Tyler Toffoli down and maybe move Mason Appleton down and then shift everything down? And then again, like I said, I don't think he's going to. So that seems unlikely. And look, I mean, it doesn't look good for Brendan Dillon, and we're not going to speculate. There's no value in that because we don't have any sort of particular insight. So we'll wait to hear what, you know, ultimately we find out today, this afternoon. But yeah, it doesn't obviously look very good based on what we saw from the blood that was on the ice in, you know, after the game. And obviously we were at BP, so it was a little hard for us to kind of focus in on that. And we didn't have the benefit of being in control of the remotes to be able to, you know, play it back and see what exactly took place. But
back and to the left, back and to the left.
But like, I think this is just one of those, you know, like ultimately the personnel aren't going to matter. Look, Neil Pionk has to be better. And we said like he was going to be kind of that ultimate. Yeah, but I knew that, Drew. We've been saying it all year. It's not like this is like a new revelation for us, but like the point was, would Neil Pionk be able to get under Nathan MacKinnon's skin? Would he be able to add a value? You know, we know he's going to bring chaos, but would he add a value? Well, we know what the value is. It's just not a positive one. And I just think that you've got to, you know, are you going to, like, we can talk about all these players and it's great and whatnot. And, you know, but ultimately if the Jets don't play a disciplined game, if the Jets don't play a structured game, more like that second period, not like that third period, then it really isn't going to matter who's in and who's out, boys, because the Jets are going to be out because they're just not playing. They're playing to Colorado's strength. They're not playing to their own. And if you do that, it's great, but it's not what got you to this point. It's not what gave you the ability to have home ice advantage. It's not what gave you the ability to, you know, challenge Dallas for first overall in the Central Division and first overall, like, think about it. And this is worth mentioning, right? Dallas, the top team in the Western Conference, down 2-0. The Jets down 2-1, the second best team in points percentage in the Western Conference. So two of the best teams from a points percentage perspective are, you know, Jets aren't necessarily, I wouldn't call them on the ropes quite yet. We'll find that out tomorrow. But again, they're in a precarious position. And again, like I said, so the personnel, it's an interesting exercise in conversation, but I, again, if this team doesn't change the manner in which they're playing, it's not going to matter who's playing in the game.
You're right. I mean, and there's a little bit of if you start swapping the lines and switching things around, are you rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic sort of mentality? You do really just need an improved performance from your top six. I mean, sometimes it is just that simple. Look, the Jets top six, and I said this earlier in the show, they're never going to be quite as good as Colorado's superstars. They're not. MacKinnon, Rantanen, they're on a different level than Scheifele and Connor and Vilardi and Ehlers and Monahan and Toffoli. They're just, you know, those guys are the primo players in the league. The question is, can the Jets just get up high enough? Can they elevate their game enough that they that the gap there shrinks? And then maybe the depth begins to come into effect. Right now, they just don't have enough from their best players. And that's where they need to find it ahead of tomorrow's game. The Jets have to play desperate. You know, people ask me, oh, why did Colorado win game two? You know, or are you surprised that Colorado wins game two or something like that? Or not even strictly this game, but oftentimes games in general. And I often fall back on the more desperate team often wins. The Jets have to be that more desperate team tomorrow night. There, you go down 3-1. Frankly, I don't care if you then win game five and make it 3-2. 3-1 against Colorado, you're not coming back from. Just the way that this series has gone so far, I don't foresee that happening. Coming back from 2-1 is still doable, but you have to put forth your best effort of the series tomorrow afternoon. And frankly, I do believe that the weird start time is to the Jets' advantage. It's such an odd 12:30 local time start. Who knows if the home ice crowd is going to be as raucous as they were last night. And I don't necessarily put a ton of stock in home ice advantage, but I think with a weird start time game like that, I think the Jets can maybe focus down a little bit better and find that desperation and elevate themselves like Jim Toth was talking about in the previous segment, Ezzy.
Drew, you mentioned the top six needing to elevate their game to what compared to what the Avalanche have done. And I think you saw specifically Mark Scheifele, Kyle Connor, Gabe Vilardi do that in the two games in Winnipeg, right? We all know the beautiful Scheifele one-handed goal, right? It looked like, you know, the Jets were well on their way to the victory, and then Connor hits the post, Vilardi gets the rebound, Georgiev makes the save, everything like that, right? Mm-hmm. We haven't seen that until yesterday with the second line, Toffoli, Monahan, and Ehlers, and I didn't even think they were fantastic, but
you have to
see this for three periods. That's the key, and we had the comment up earlier that the Jets are not able to impose their game plan against the Avalanche, whereas we've seen the Avalanche do that for big chunks of the series. Not all three games, I would say more so in the last two games, because the first game, let's not forget, the Jets were up 7-4. And as Drew mentioned, you get some, you know, late power play goals with the extra man, right? So, you know, this is an opportunity. This is a do or die game. If the series goes back to Winnipeg and they're down 3-1, I think it's going to be very tough for the Jets, even though they'll have home ice advantage back, as Drew mentioned, if they tie the series up. If you go back down 3-1, you know, I just don't see it happening with the way the Avalanche are playing. So this is a very important game. And I realize that, you know, we don't like to use hyperbole too much on this show, but they're in a hole right now. And I think, you know, I don't think the series is over. I could easily see. And yeah, Drew, maybe, you know, the afternoon start benefits the Jets in terms of, you know, you don't have the loud Friday night crowd. And we know Hellebuyck, for whatever reason. I mean, people always say Hellebuyck plays great in the afternoon games. Hellebuyck would play great if he's playing at 4 a.m. Like, Hellebuyck is the greatest goalie in the world. I don't care what anybody says. The Jets have allowed 5 goals a game minus the empty netters. That's a team stat.
Yeah.
How many of those goals yesterday were Hellebuyck's fault? I would challenge somebody to say more than one of those goals were Hellebuck's fault. Like, on the power play, Makar and Rantanen and McKinnon, these guys, they were whipping the puck around and they were getting chances, and Hellebuyck was doing everything he could. Jim mentioned it. He had 26 or 27 saves, Dave, after two periods. So, you know, like, again, you don't throw your starting goaltender who played 60 games this year and was a big reason why you won 52 games. Obviously, Lauren Brossoit had a big part in that as well, Dave, but you don't throw him under the bus after he has, you know, one or two games. The Jets have to be better defensively, but I do think Drew's right. And I go back to what Jim Toth talked about last segment. The Jets play a speed pressure game that requires the puck to be moved quickly out of the zone. You transition in, and whether that's you're going to, you know, get a cycle game going, you have to come with layers of attack. And I think the ozone time in all three games has been a big issue, and the Jets need to play a much better complete game, because so far this series, in all three games, it's basically been two good periods, one bad period.
Yeah, and it's those bad periods that have just been absolute killers for the Winnipeg Jets. You had the comment up there on the screen before, Dave, about the importance of playing tomorrow at 5-on-5. Look, 100%. you can't expect to give up to take zero penalties in the course of a game. I mean, you know, we know that there's going to be some amount of minor penalties, but really the Jets can't take more than two, maybe three. And three might be pushing it, given the success rate of the Colorado Avalanche power play so far. I mean, you're giving up at least a goal a game on the power play, and that makes it that much more of a hill to climb. Now you are fortunate in that so far your power play has actually been pretty good. Colorado's power play is 36%. The Jets has been at 28%. But you know, when you're giving up, you know, if you take three penalties and you're giving up a goal, well, it's a real, you're putting yourself even further behind the eight ball. So you have to focus tomorrow on playing the cleanest game you have played all, you know, all series long, for sure.
Well, look, what do we always say? Your record is who you are. And again, I know that people say discount the regular season, but you do play 82 games for a reason, right, guys? And so, you know, I would suggest that some of the things that you do are going to be reflective of your continued success or lack thereof in the playoffs. So, you know, look, do I think that what happened between the Jets and Colorado specifically is indicative of the series? No, I don't. But I'm just saying the totality of 82 games needs to be respected to a certain degree. What were the Jets in the regular season? They took the eighth least amount of penalties in the NHL. They weren't a highly penalized team. Now that was to their advantage because their PK sucks. So it's a good thing that they weren't taking a lot of penalties because they couldn't kill them when they did take them. But, or you could argue that if they took more, they would have more opportunities to improve and then maybe get it better. But ultimately, they did not take a lot of penalties all year long. Yeah. That's the Jets. And again, I understand that the Avs speed boys, you know, is causing breakdowns that you might not have. But look, like Gabriel Vilardi being the casual with the stick, like I know he didn't intend to do it, but your intention doesn't really matter, right? It's not like, sorry, I didn't mean to catch you with that high stick. You caught someone with a high stick. It was a 4-minute penalty.
Yeah.
Neil Pionk, you know, pressured and dumping the puck over the glass. Again, like I said, I don't have a problem specifically with the way the penalties that were called because they were penalties. It was just the fact that the refs had put the whistles away in the second and decided to bring them out in the third. But my point I'm making is that for a Jets team that didn't call penalty, that didn't get penalties, they need to go back if they want to have any chance of winning.
When we come back, Megan Angley from DNVR Avalanche is set to join us for the perspective of the series from our friends in Colorado. Saturday morning, Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, 30 minutes to go. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on all of our social media platforms. Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Saturday morning. We remind you, tomorrow afternoon, following game four between the Jets and the Colorado Avalanche, it will be the Illegal Curve post-game show back here, breaking down everything that happens in what can certainly be considered a tipping point game if the series comes back to Winnipeg, knotted up at two games apiece, or if the Avalanche take a stranglehold 3-1 lead. For the perspective from Denver, we're pleased to welcome to the program Megan Angley. She covers the Avs for DVNR Avalanche. Megan, good morning. Early morning after a late night. We appreciate you joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a quick turnaround for sure.
It certainly was a quick turnaround for us all, but you're an hour earlier even, so we do appreciate it. Megan, obviously this has been a series that I think by and large has been controlled by the Avalanche. Game one was such a sort of ridiculous gong show, but after that, games two and three, the Avalanche have clearly been the better of the two teams on the ice. Are we seeing sort of the championship pedigree of the Avalanche, you know, shine through? We know what happened last year, losing in the first round to the Kraken and the sour taste that left in their mouths, as particularly, you know, Nathan MacKinnon's mouth. We remember his post-series comments last year. Are we seeing them sort of elevate their game when it matters the most right now?
There's absolutely truth to that. And I think what's been interesting about the series so far is when you look at it period by period inside each of these games, there have been tight periods wherein I believe the Jets played strong defensive hockey and have been pretty stingy and have managed their lanes very well and have allowed very little for the Avs to generate chances. And so with that in mind, I think even looking at the result from last night, it's a little misleading. Like, the Avs didn't necessarily have the best second period, but mm-hmm. that third period, to your point at the top of the show, is this is the championship pedigree shining through for the Avs. And a lot of it's experience, because a player like Casey Mittelstadt elevating his game in the playoffs isn't necessarily the expectation, because he hasn't seen the NHL playoffs before, but he is surrounded by leadership that has, and experienced leadership that has joined the group newly, like Zach Parise, getting on the score sheet in the postseason, I think is a testament to why they sought out that type of player in the first place. And this is where I think, on the whole, Colorado's depth, and it was designed to be this way, has contributed so much more than the depth of last year. They, by all accounts, didn't really have a 2C option. And I think some people were prepared to question whether or not Casey Mittelstadt could be that for the Avs as well. But the front office was really aggressive at the deadline this year to round out their depth. And I think that's what you're seeing primarily shine through here too for the Avs, is not only the experience of having been there before, but also the depth contributions that the front office was keen to get for them going into the playoffs this year.
Miles Wood's been really good. Ross Colton's been really good. I was going to ask you about Zach Parise, Megan, but you mentioned him. 2 goals, obviously the first goal for the Avalanche yesterday. And I reminded people when we were previewing Game 1, he scored 21 goals for the Islanders last year. So yeah, he might be in his late 30s, but you know, he was productive for the Islanders, and you know, he's been good. He's on the second line, we should mention now. He's off the top line, right? But I wanted to ask you about Alexander Georgiev, because obviously the first game you were in Winnipeg, and obviously, you know, we loved having you in Winnipeg. I told you I didn't get a chance to introduce myself, but that's because you had bodyguards around you. But I'm just joking. But, you know, Georgiev wasn't good in Game 1, and he elevated his game. He was obviously better in Games 2 and Games 3. I don't think a lot of people thought that Georgiev would outplay Hellebuck in the first 2 games. And throughout the first hour and a half of this show, we were talking about kind of how ridiculous it is that some Jets fans want to see Lauren Brossoit in for Game 4. Some wanted to see him in for Game 3. But I guess, what have you seen? Because you've watched Georgiev, you know, this whole year. We've only watched him really against the Jets during the regular season and in the playoffs. But is this just kind of what we've seen all year, the kind of up and down Georgiev? Or is it a question of that he realized that he really didn't give his team a chance to win in Game 1, and he knew, because Eustace Annanen was still out for Game 2, he had no choice but to be better?
It's interesting for a couple of reasons. One, looking at the Seattle series, Georgiev, the year that he had in his inaugural season as a starter, was actually pretty steady. And then even in that Seattle series where the odds were just stacked against Colorado last year, I thought he was pretty steady still. And so the Georgiev of the last 2 games reminds me of that Georgiev. It's not necessarily going to blow your minds, but it's good enough. And what I think the difference maker for Georgiev is, because I'd be lying to you after Game 1 if I told you that I believed in him the whole time, because there have been ups and downs throughout the course of this year. It was very much completely in Georgiev's hands. I couldn't have told you either way how this series was going to go just after Game 1, based on that performance. And it is because of the mental battle that he's had with himself all year. But I think what really made the difference was the support from the team around him. That's not to say that it's been absent in some of the lows during this year, but it was so smothering how much support the team and the coaching staff met him with following Game 1. And I think it was a necessity, because they don't get through this series unless they rally around Georgiev. Because unlike the situation with your goaltending in Winnipeg, where you have a very good backup waiting right behind Connor Hellebuyck, obviously with Eustace Annanen sick, that just wasn't an option. And so they were anchored to Georgiev for Game 1 and for Game 2. They just really didn't have a viable option to come in as relief. And so I think that put a lot of pressure on them, and it's why they met Georgiev with the support that they did, is their hands were tied. And for what it's worth, I view the goaltending so differently, because in spite of the results that Hellebuyck has had in net, he would still be the guy that I trust. just everything that I've seen from his body of work as a goaltender and his mental fortitude as a goaltender, he would still be the guy that I go to in net. Whereas with Georgiev, that was up in the air after game one. And because of the Anunin situation with him being ill, they were kind of handcuffed to him. And I think that's why they had to rally around him with support and take ownership of their mistakes. You know, there's a lot that you could point to was Georgiev probably wishes he had some of those goals back. But there were defensive breakdowns, too, that the Avs could take responsibility for. And I think they just really leaned into that in their preparations for games two and three. And it has improved for them defensively also. And I think that was a necessity as well.
You know, Megan, at the beginning of the series, the Avs announced that Jonathan Drouin had been ruled out for the entirety of the series. So, you know, I thought it would have a much more significant impact, obviously, given the role, 19 goals. I don't remember how many assists he had, but he had a good amount of assists as well. So he's produced. He had a season like he hasn't had in years. Were you surprised that the Avs, which aren't necessarily the deepest team, were able to kind of absorb a loss of a player like him?
Just looking at last year, to some extent, yes, there's a little bit of surprise because they lost Val Nichushkin last year, and that was a really difficult player. But they also had Kale Makar get suspended in that series. So that's where the circumstances really started to stack. And that's where I draw the similarities. Like, all right, they don't have Sam Girard, at least at the start of the series. They don't have Jonathan Drouin. Not a one-for-one swap with Val Nichushkin, but a key player in their top six that's difficult to replace. And I think what's been interesting is they've had these players like waiting in the balance, ready to step up into a bigger role, like Casey Mittelstadt. And I think that's what allowed them to absorb a loss of that size. And this is also where Zach Parise, his versatility as a player, can't be understated, like, or overstated, sorry, can't be overstated, because his ability to have played up on that top line until Van Nichushkin really gets his legs under him, and then continue to make an impact on that second line where he's been placed following that, has been such a key difference maker for the Avs. And honestly, looking at how Bednar has utilized all of his players within his forward group, this isn't necessarily a look that we saw in the regular season either. This is kind of unique to the postseason and where I think Parise's veteran leadership really shines through.
Megan Angley is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Megan covers the Colorado Avalanche for DNVR Avalanche. You can follow Megan on social media, of course, and read all of her great writing as she covers the series in its entirety. Megan, you know, Arturi Lehkonen has now been a member of the Avalanche for a couple of postseason runs. Is he just sort of the guy that Jared Bednar can count on to be Mr. Consistency? Bednar sort of knows what to expect from him on each and every shift. You know, he's going to be causing chaos in front of the net. He's so adept at tipping pucks. He's just a sort of a coach's dream in that he's consistent. He's not flashy. He's not necessarily going to get the headlines, but Bednar knows that he can rely on him shift in, shift out.
Absolutely. You know, Jared Bednar as a coach too likes familiarity. He has players that we describe as security blankets that in all situations you can count on him putting that guy out there. And sometimes it's mystifying. Like sometimes you're wondering why Andrew Cogliano is taking that face off to kick off 3-on-3 overtime in the regular season. But he has his guys and they're his guys for a reason. And Arturi Lehkonen, I think, has emerged as that type of guy for him because of how reliable he is and how responsible he is defensively. That is just something when a line needs a little bit of an adult and a little bit more responsibility, you put Arturi Lehkonen on it, and it's going to be a little more responsible on the forecheck, a little bit harder, working to retrieve pucks, and it just improves the possession game of that second line, just having Arturi Lehkonen on it.
Ezzy, you're muted.
Sorry, Megan. My little sausage fingers were having trouble getting to that mute button. Sorry, I wanted to ask you about Sean Walker. Sean Walker is a guy who I think a lot of Jets fans were hoping would be acquired prior to the trade deadline. And he's a guy that has no points in the series. And I kind of was going to ask you the question, like, did anybody even notice Sean Walker in this game? Which is probably a good thing, right? And he was dropped down to the third pair, I believe, right? But I guess, what have you seen from him in the series? Because to me, he just seems like he's doing his job out there really efficiently and quietly.
He's been an interesting player in this series because the things that you love about Walker is that instinct to activate and get involved in play, and sometimes the eagerness to go deep in the ozone has costed the Avs the other way, and I won't pin that squarely on him. Sometimes Manson has been caught taking adventures in the offensive zone as well, and that has caught them then off the rush. And I'm not, again, pinning that squarely on Walker, but that instinct, I think, has cost them a little bit in this series, so there have been some defensive mistakes. But I have also really liked that puck-moving ability that he teases, because I think that on the whole improves the possession game, which helps the Avs just get better ice. So even though I haven't necessarily noticed him in terms of getting on the score sheet, I still think that he has greatly improved what that bottom pairing is, just going back to the Seattle series where they lose Jack Johnson. Josh Manson is not 100% health in that series. And so just having a healthy Sean Walker to add to the depth of this decor, I think has rounded it out nicely. And I don't think he's been, I maybe framed that as like a total defensive liability. He definitely isn't that. There's been energy sparked in some of the shifts that he to keep at the blue line in the first period that I think also helped alongside a good penalty kill, keep Georgiev confident in that. And so I think that even though there were some mistakes on Walker's end that happened later in that game, the way that he played in that first period also helped to boost Georgiev's confidence. And I've really liked what he's added to the decor for this postseason.
You know, Megan, last time we had you on when the Jets were taking on the Avs, we talked about Gabriel Landeskog because he had just come back from Sweden and he was training with the team and he was being back. And we asked you about his presence and what it's meant. Well, he's still with the team and there was some speculation he might be ready to go. We saw him here in Winnipeg. He was on the ice. Even if he isn't ready to go, are you still seeing that positive impact that a guy with his level of experience can bring? And what is that that he's bringing to the team on a daily basis, helping this team as much as he can when he can't be on the ice, even if he, when I mean on the ice, but not playing?
I think about how the Avs as a team really seem to benefit from consistency when it comes to messaging. I don't think they have trouble absorbing messaging. I just think it really helps to reinforce what they're trying to do as a group when they're all pulling the rope in the same direction. And that is something that Landeskog, even just being there and being a voice in that room, helps contribute to. Like, I look at the fact that the Avs go on the road and they take signage with them that they put up in the visiting locker room with just like inspirational expressions that are unique to the team. They're doing it in the playoffs as well with like playoff specific slogans, but they've been doing this for as long as I know on the road. And I just imagine Gabriel Landeskog in Winnipeg going into the locker room in between periods and just being in an extension of the coaching staff and the messaging that they're receiving. And I can only see the ways in which that helps this team. I even look at the third period in game three last night, like they are going into that down 2-1 and they don't know that they're about to receive a ton of power plays, but I still feel like there's a sense of confidence from that group. And I think it all starts with just the consistency and the cycle of leadership that they have. And it starts with Gabriel Landeskog because he has made a point to be involved with this group even throughout his rehab.
Megan, he doesn't get the headlines on the back end. Those usually go to Cale Makar, even Devon Taves as that secondary asset. But Sam Girard back in the lineup last night, he missed the first two games after suffering a concussion against the Jets in that 7-0 game about, I guess that would be 2 weeks ago now. You know, what does his return to the lineup do to solidify the back end for the Avs? It seemed to me that Girard, I mean, he's obviously on the second power play unit for the Avs. Does his presence maybe also elevate and sort of benefit Josh Manson as well? Or, you know, from your perspective, what is sort of the best attributes that Girard brings with being back in the lineup for the Avs?
Looking back to his return from the player assistance program this year, he would remind me in talking about Lehkonen as the adult on that second line. He's the adult on that Manson pairing, even though he is the one who is the mobile D of that pairing. Again, Josh Manson can go on adventures sometimes too. And I actually think that Sam Girard has been sort of the even keel player that keeps that balance and that defensive responsibility there and helps it to, I just think, be a little bit safer at both ends of the ice. And I look to the way in which he immediately gets on the score sheet because he sees Casey Mittelstadt opposite him on the ice on what I'm basically considering an extension of the power play. I know it had expired, but that's the second unit as far as I'm concerned. And that's the impact too, is you have a responsible defensive player that makes Josh Manson better because they're just more responsible together. But the offensive contributions that you can get from your back end with Sam Girard in the mix, it just elevates where you're starting to see scoring contributions throughout the lineup, because going back to that Seattle series, they were hurting for scoring outside of their top line, and now they're getting it from a variety of places. And whenever they can get it from their blue line, a lot of their offense does run through their decor. And so having Sam Girard just helps the balance of the overall minutes too. Like getting him back in game three and having him play 21 minutes speaks to the trust that he has in the eyes of Bednar as well. And it's great to see him take on a significant amount of ice in his first game back, that he's just come back and he's feeling good. And it's wonderful to see, and probably a big part of the result in game three as well.
I think you're 100% right, Megan. I think that, you know, Drew mentioned it, Cale Makar, Devon Taves, Josh Manson. I mean, we said this earlier in the show. Some people, I think, might actually be forgetting the Avalanche won the Stanley Cup 2 years ago, and a lot of the same core is there, right? Like, not all the guys. Obviously, Nazem Kadri is the one that sticks out, right? But I agree. I thought, you know, Girard was really impressive, and I'm not just saying that because you cover the Avalanche, and I apologize to Jets fans, but look, you mentioned it. Girard played 21 minutes. And he hadn't played in like almost 2 weeks, right? And that's not the easiest situation to come into in game three at that point in the series. And, I agree with you as well about getting goals from a variety of sources. And you were specifically referencing the defense there. But a lot of the narrative heading into the series was the Jets forward depth being better than the Avalanche forward depth. We talked about Zach Parise, Casey Mittelstadt. I don't know if you want to call him secondary scoring because he's a second line center who obviously replaced Ryan Johansson, who, as you know, wasn't having the best season. That's why they decided to move on from him. But I also look at, like I mentioned earlier, Miles Wood and Ross Colton. Miles Wood didn't have any points yesterday, but he had two goals in Winnipeg in the first two games. And, you know, he fights Adam Lowry at the end of that game. And I know some people thought that that was kind of a meaningless fight, but I guess, you know, can you break this down to, you know, not only are the Avs top six outplaying the Jets top two lines, but the Avalanche depth forwards are also outplaying the Jets third and fourth lines, maybe with the exception of game one when Lowry had the two goals and Nemestikov had the goal. Sorry, I'm throwing a lot of questions at you, but I mean, I guess I'm saying, like, you know, maybe this is the forward groups are a lot more evenly matched than some people thought heading into the series.
Myself included, because looking back at my series preview for this and going line by line just within the forward group specifically, I would have given Colorado the edge on the top line specifically, just the headliners that Colorado has in MacKinnon and Rantanen, perhaps having the edge there. But then the rest of the lines, the second line was a crapshoot in my eyes because the Colorado second line was so unproven at that point that I probably would have given the nod to Winnipeg there. Winnipeg's third line, absolutely, I gave the nod to, if we're classifying Lowry's line as the third line. But I actually, this is where I look at the coaching. And I look at the way in which, especially not having last change on the road for Bednar, this is where I think the way in which he has utilized his ability to set matchups very effectively, because I think that Colorado's depth has stepped up in a big way, but Bednar is also very calculated in using such a well-conditioned Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen to challenge Winnipeg's depth. And I think that has been where the vulnerabilities have been exposed, because I still believe that Winnipeg has terrific depth, that side by side will outcompete Colorado in a certain type of way. But the way that Bednar has deployed his forward group is what I think has given Winnipeg's depth the problems that we've seen, because there's a lot of talent there still, but Bednar is matching up to it very well.
Megan Angley covers the Colorado Avalanche for DNVR Avalanche. You can read all of her coverage of this first round series at the DNVR.com. Megan, thanks so much for joining us. We look forward to your recap of game four tomorrow afternoon.
We'll and Megan, we get to see you for at least one more game, at least one more.
Yes,
maybe two.
I'll see you guys for game five.
Terrific. We look forward to that. Megan, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Have a great rest of your day and enjoy game four tomorrow afternoon.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. There she goes, Megan Angley, joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Jets up against it. They need to win in Denver tomorrow afternoon. The series is coming home regardless, but it's a much different series if it's a 3-1 series versus a 2-all series, especially because of the tenor of the past few games. The Jets needing their best players to elevate their performance, Dave, on Sunday afternoon, to step up and prove that they are more than they were last year when they went out meekly in five games after winning the first game, similar to how this series has gone so far.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I also think this is fair.
Put on your antlers. It's time for the Minook Moose Minute on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I mean, let's be real.
For the year, last one.
I was going to say, well, not as, again, as I caution folks, it's not, this is going to be, there'll be some more Minook Moose Minutes potentially because we still have to do exit interviews.
Yeah,
we still have to do our round tables. We still have to do our round table, which is weird because it's not really at a table and it's not round. But anyways, we do a round table discussion. And so we will have some more Minook Moose facts coming your way. And of course, I suspect there'll be some guys recalled up to be extras for the Winnipeg Jets. After we're done the exit interviews.
I'm really looking forward to the fishing trip with Tyrell Bauer and Kyle Capobianco.
Yes, yes. I will definitely report back on that one as, but, you know, again, just to give folks the recap, the Moose were in a best of three play-in series challenge against the Texas Stars, a Texas Stars team that they defeated handily over the weekend. So the last two regular season games, the Moose beat them, I think it was like 8-3 and 4-1 in the last two games of the season.
Sort of like a 7-0 Jets win against the Avs.
Sort of like that. And so game one did not go the Moose way. And game two, they actually had a pretty good game. Couldn't score. Remy Poirier was excellent for Texas. And the Moose lose 2-0. They lose the series 2-0. So their season is over and they are returning back home. Good season, though. You know, got to give them a lot of credit. They were the last place team in January, 32nd in the AHL, which I guess is a little misleading since they don't play nearly, you know, 60% of the other teams. But the point is, when you look at them overall in the standings, they had the worst record, the least amount of points in the AHL, and they climbed back into a, at least challenge for a play-in spot. So the prospects got a lot of depth. They did a lot of growth, which is good if you're a Jets fan. You know, Nikita Chibrikov, Brad Lambert, even the guys who got injured, Danny Zilkin, Chaz Lucius, you know, go down the line. All those guys got a lot of good experience. Ford.
Christian Reichel, I know he's a little bit older, Dave. I mean, you know better than I do, but Christian Reichel tore it up in the second half.
No, he did. I don't think he had a goal in his first 20 something games. Then he went on a tear. Jeffrey Viel, the same. Parker Ford, the guy who remember back in training camp, folks, when the Jets, everyone was saying he could be the Jets' 13th forward. Well, then he ends up having a slow acclimatization to, you know, his first season as a pro. And then he had an excellent second half again with that Reichel and Viel line. So lots of good growth from the, like I said, Brad Lambert's and Nikita Jerbrikov's, but also guys like Parker Ford. And you're right, Ezzie, Reichel, even Henry Nikkanen started to pick it up and have a better.
I think Brad Lambert, half. Dave, sorry, this is your Minook Moose Minute, but I do think Brad Lambert is a candidate for full-time NHL action next year. I'm not saying he's going to play all 82 games. I've just been very impressed. I know we said at the beginning of the year, guys, pump the brakes on Big Bad Brad. But that one game he played, and I realize it's a small sample size.
Ezzie, but come on.
No, I just said it. I just said it's a small sample size. But I think he was really impressive. Look, Drew, I think he has a long NHL career ahead of him, and he's going to be in the NHL. If it's not next year, it's going to be the year after. That's all I'm saying. And same thing with Chibrikov. Like, Lambert and Chibrikov are going to be Jets sooner rather than later. That's all I'm saying. And I don't think they're a flash in the pan, and I don't think they're going to spend another 2 or 3 years in the AHL. And also, Dave, Ville Heinola, like, just talk about Ville Heinola, because it seems like to me this has to be the last year in the American Hockey League for him.
Well, it is, because he's no longer waiver exempt. So regardless of whether the Jets are prepared to give him that chance next year, and we knew that they were based on what Rick Bonus said at, you know, this year, we know that but next year they have no choice. They either play him, and by play him, I mean like as either the sixth defenseman or a fourth defenseman or the seventh defenseman. But the point is, or you trade him, because ultimately you're going to, a team will take a flyer on him. There's no question. Look, the Minnesota Wild took a flyer on Declan Chisholm. There's no question that a team would take a flyer on Ville Heinola. So you're absolutely right.
If you trade him, that would be a lot of wasted development.
It would be. But I mean,
the Jets have been good at wasting development on the back end as of late. Well, that's been the skill set of the team.
I was going to say, now you've got to look,
shout out to Sammy Niku, right, Drew?
Not so much him, but
Kovacevic and Chisholm. Yeah. But look, and the one other player we have to mention, boys, because I think, you know, this season doesn't turn around without him, is 2023 fifth round pick, Thomas Milic. He was excellent for the Manitoba Moose, you know, in the ECHL, which I think was good to start, kind of get his feet wet, a lot less pressure. But then when Colin Delia and Oskari Salminen weren't getting the job done for the Moose, which again, at the beginning of the season, is not one of the areas that I expected to be a problem, Thomas Milic came in and he was excellent. He's a battler. So the Jets might have something special in him, but again, that's going to take some years. And even with Brad Lambert, Nikita Chibrikov, I expect them to be Moose for most of next year, because they're specifically developing Lambert as a center. And as he's right, though, I mean, if they don't re-sign Monahan, that gives them an opportunity. If they do, that gives them some time. We'll see. But my point, ultimately, the kind of crux of what I'm saying is that it was a good season overall. It came, it ended a little too short for these guys for their liking, but we'll have plenty more to come on the Moose. And of course, we'll catch up with the prospects throughout the summer, but that's not for till August.
We'll have plenty more to come on the Jets and the Avalanche as well tomorrow afternoon following game 4, the Illegal Curve post-game show. Going to be right around, let's say, 4:15 p.m., somewhere in that vicinity. Time to be determined, of course, based on how the game unfolds. If there's overtime, then we know the post-game show will start late. But whenever it does end, the Illegal Curve post-game show will start, bringing you all the latest insight and analysis on an epic game 4 between the Jets and the Avs. We remind everybody that, of course, we want you to smash the like button and subscribe to the YouTube channel. IllegalCurve.com will be updated all day long with the latest Jets news as the Jets hit the ice in about 3.5 hours time in Denver for a skate. There won't be a pregame skate tomorrow with the early start time, so the guys will hit the ice in 3.5 hours and we'll hear from Jets head coach Rick Bonus about anything going on in terms
of
lineup
changes. Drew will have a pregame snack, though.
I always do. Big thank you to all the sponsors of Illegal Curve who make the post-game show, the pre-game show, the Saturday show, and the website a possibility. That, of course, is our friends at City Place. We'll be there on Tuesday for the Illegal Curve pre-game show prior to Game 5. Time to be determined. The start time of that game will be formally announced later on this afternoon after the Islanders and the Hurricanes. So that's what the NHL is waiting on, depending on if the Islanders and the Hurricanes need a game 5. If they do, it'll be a later game. If they don't, it might be a reasonable start time on Tuesday. So stay tuned for that and join us at City Place. Our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, great article in today's Winnipeg Free Press, if you haven't yet seen it. Massive feature on Rumors celebrating their 40th anniversary. So congratulations to them, and go check out that article available in both the Dead Tree edition and the online edition of the Free Press.
And there's a full page poster of you, right, Drew?
Yes, exactly what it is. Grid Park, use code Illegal Curve to park for free. You'll need that for Tuesday's game. Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, our friends at Tough Duck always give out the Tough Duck hardest hitting comment. That'll be tomorrow afternoon. Yes, Dave.
Just if folks want to, you know what? Let's be nice to the folks. I know you're not happy with folks right now. Things don't seem to be working out for the Jets. So let's make your lives better. We've got some Grid Park codes for folks who are going down to the game on Tuesday. Hit me an email, dave@illegalcurve.com. Let us know that you want to go to the game and park with Grid Park. Andrew Haleko had said that he was able to use Grid Park for the first time and found out about it because of us. So congrats to Andrew. And if Andrew wants free parking, he can send me a message as well. dave@illegalcurve or I see Dave. Send a bunch of messages and we'll hook you up. You don't have to use it on Tuesday, but if you can, if you will.
Drew, Dave's about to get 500 emails in the next 3 hours.
For the record, let's do a little disclaimer. Not everyone who emails will win, but we'll try and select as many.
You have to tell us who your favorite member of Illegal Curve is, why, and include illustrations.
There you go. Our friends at Boston Pizza, they hosted us last night for the Illegal Curve watch party and post-game show. Big thanks to them for having done so. Seagram's has the shot of the game, Rolly's Transfer, and of course, Farmery Beer. Support these fine businesses because of their continued support of Illegal Curve hockey. Thanks to all of you who joined us late last night and again early this morning. We appreciate the support. Smash the like button, subscribe to the channel, tell your friends, tell your family the best place to be on Saturday mornings after each and every Winnipeg Jets game. And of course, before the home playoff games is the Illegal Curve YouTube channel. Hope everybody has a wonderful Saturday. We'll see you again tomorrow afternoon for the post game show. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.